Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. Hope you've had a great week. So, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the latest induction ceremony is going to be held at Barclays Center the night we're having this discussion, and then it's going to air on HBO on April 29th. Pearl Jam is being inducted.
Yeah.
Tupac Shakur is being inducted. ELO are being inducted. Who else is being inducted? Lots of other people.
There's Joan Baez. Yes. Tupac.
I said Tupac.
Oh, sorry. Well, and
Tupac's so good, he's being inducted three times.
Yeah, he's the first solo rapper to ever be inducted.
Yes, you're very enamored of that fact, and I think it is an important fact.
It's an important fact. It's just noteworthy that the rap groups in the 80s, that rap was more of a group thing. Now by the 90s, which we're finally in with the Hall of Fame, it's more solo artists.
That is true. It will hopefully be the first of many.
Yes.
As Gene Simmons, I'm sure, is dying. Gene Simmons, I'm sure, has a long list of all the solo rappers who should get in right after Tupac. We'll consult him.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm really excited about this ceremony. I'm excited about a bunch of performances, and we've been lucky enough to see a bunch of Hall of Fames in person. I'd say it's one of the nicer perks of our jobs, and I've gotten to see a bunch over the years. And even the old shows that were never broadcast, which was a very frustrating thing in the 90s, you'd see like 2-second clips on the news of like the most insane jam ever, and they'd be like, and that's all we have. And it was maddening. But now you can see and hear all those things on YouTube and elsewhere, and there's a DVD that you can buy. So there's so many great ones. I'll start by asking you, what are your favorite Hall of Fame performances? Just a couple.
My favorite performances, I love the Talking Heads reunion in 2002, I believe, because they didn't play together in so long. It's the last time they played. They rehearsed for a while. They brought in the full Stop Making Sense band. It was just a real emotional moment to finally see that happen.
Yeah, that's number one. What else?
I love the Prince thing, obviously, which is so famous.
Yeah.
When he honored George Harrison. I love the Cream reunion. I love Nirvana when they played with all of the guest singers.
So. Yeah, now you're just stealing mine. But yes. I will say in a moment, what we're really going to do is talk about the craziest moments at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions over the years, and there really have been a lot of crazy ones. There's also been a lot of full-on great performances. I just wanted to touch on that. So yeah, Nirvana was truly incredible, especially, I never got to see them live. I don't think you did either.
No.
Much too young.
Yeah.
I theoretically could have seen them, but I never got to. And it all built up that night because it was the last thing. It was a very long night. The E Street Band gave, God bless them, gave like about 3 hours worth of acceptance speeches. So there was a lot of build up, Hall & Oates. It was a lot. And then, you know, at the end of the night, you have Nirvana, and just to have Grohl back at the drum kit playing Smells Like Teen Spirit, it was eerie. It was really great.
It was the first time they'd played Nirvana songs since the last show with Kurt.
Right.
I mean, it was a huge moment, and they were wondering for a while about who could possibly fill Kurt's shoes. Then they had the idea of getting 4 separate women, which was great.
as opposed to 4... a four-headed woman, like a sort of Voltron.
Yeah, I think they were thinking first about, hey, you know, do we get Paul McCartney again? Like, wait, because no, you know, it was an idea to flip it.
Right, so that it takes the pressure off of making some dude kind of like take the burden, or even one woman, and it was clever. Lord was pretty incredible that night, and I remember actually pogoing during Smells Like Teen Spirit. It was sad too. It really was sad. But I think the funniest thing was Chris Novoselic said that he bought the Nirvana bass tab book to learn the bass parts to the Nirvana songs, which is like the funniest thing ever. It blows my mind. I think about that every once in a while. I think about that and laugh, because they happen to be not the most complicated bass parts in the world, and he wrote them. But the idea that he's sitting there, like, he played them years ago.
Yeah.
Some dude sits there and painstakingly like writes down what he played. He 25 years later picks up the book and is
he relearns it.
The dude who played this is pretty good.
Well, it's like Tommy Thayer when he taught Ace Frehley all his parts back when Kiss, when they reformed. He needed the Kiss tribute guy to like teach him all of his parts.
Did Chris lose those parts when he was hit in the head with his own bass at the VMAs?
Well, it had been 25 years or so since he'd played, and then that night they went to a club in Brooklyn and played for like 2 hours, all Nirvana.
Yeah, I don't remember
and
about that.
We didn't go.
We didn't get any. That's okay.
Possibly the single coolest concert in the history of my time in the city was that. and
we didn't know it was happening, and we weren't invited. But that's okay. Yeah. Neither was everyone else in the world, so that is really okay.
Yes.
So, craziest moments, which aren't just performances, because one of the things that causes the tension that makes these events interesting is that, you know, you're often getting people who haven't spoken to each other in many years, people who have, you know, perhaps only seen each other in courtrooms.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only place in the world where people who truly despise each other in bands are forced to come together.
Yeah.
There's no other thing that can make it happen. There's nothing else that can make Led Zeppelin stand up there, basically.
Right. It's amazing how often they end up hating each other.
Well, bands, like bands break up, or they change their lineups, and the Rock Hall will bring in the first lineup, and then these past members that have been just nursing hatred for decades sometimes, they sit at home for years thinking about their hatred of these people, and then they have to stand in front of cameras and smile.
Yeah.
Or not, or scream.
And the funny thing is, like, the guys in Kiss handled it so classily.
Well,
in the end.
But they wouldn't play together.
But while they were up there, perfect gentlemen. After all that, you know, believe me, there was a lot of buildup.
Yeah, but Paul's speech was kind of bitter. I mean, they were a little pissy about the whole thing.
So anyway, let's start at the very beginning, which is what?
First year was 1986 at the Waldorf Astoria.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a small scale thing back then. There were cameras there, but not a ton. There was no thought of it being broadcast. And like Chuck Berry was the first person to be inducted by Keith Richards.
Yeah.
And that sort of began his comeback of sorts, because that got the ball rolling on the documentary. But the first 2 years, it was a pretty small scale thing, and they were largely taken in the acts of the 50s. I mean, it was the pioneers that got in back then, and they didn't perform till the very end.
Right. But then 88 is sort of when things started to get nuts.
Yeah, and then, because in 87, they screwed up and brought in everybody out of the 50s. That didn't get in the first year. It was like 16 people. So they weren't thinking all long term. Then by 88, it was Dylan and the Beatles and the Supremes and the Beach Boys, and it was crazy.
And Mike Love's speech. So the Beach Boys were inducted.
Yeah,
they all get to make their speech, and Mike Love makes, I think, one of the greatest speeches in the history of, you know, human discourse, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's a strange thing because he should have been happy. They just had Kokomo, so they weren't exactly in a bad patch. You know, they had a bigger hit than the Stones that they've had in years, or anybody. It was a true huge pop hit.
Well, to put this in context, let's hear what Mike Love had to say.
I also think it's sad that there are other people who aren't here tonight, and those are the people who have passed away. Those are the obvious ones, but the other not so obvious ones are people like Paul McCartney, who couldn't be here tonight because he's in a lawsuit with Ringo and Yoko. That's what he sent a telegram to some high-priced attorney in this room, you know? Now that's a bummer, because we're talking about harmony, right, in the world. If we can't get it together in America and in England in harmony within our groups, I mean, believe it. You can believe it, the Beach Boys have their own interstitial or whatever you call it, squabbles. But that's a bummer when Ms. Ross can't make it, you know? The Beach Boys continue to do about 180 performances last year. I'd like to see the mop tops match that. I'd like to see Mick Jagger get out on his stage and do I Get Around versus Jumpin' Jack Flash any day now. Now, a lot of people are going to go out of this room tonight thinking that Mike Love is crazy. Well, they've been saying that for years. Ain't nothing new about that.
What's so funny about that is he said he didn't realize that Mick Jagger, that he's in the front row. He was calling out Jagger because he didn't show up, and he was right there.
Well, but he wanted to hear
battle of the bands.
Yeah, I didn't really, to this day, I'm not sure what he was proposing. Like I guess he was saying that they performed I Get Around with more energy than Mick performs Jumping Jack Flash. Is that?
I think it was a lot of frustration is coming forward. He was in the room with Dylan and the Stones and the Beatles, and in his mind, the Beach Boys are as mighty as those groups. And they were playing, you know, fairs and everything, and they were doing about 190 shows a year or something to that point. Or more. It's crazy. And he just felt that they didn't get the same respect as the Stones and the Beatles get. And he's been asked about it a lot, and his line is always that he didn't meditate that morning. Because he lashed out at the entire world of like classic rock, basically.
If you watch if you actually watch the clip on YouTube, we can't provide for you at the moment, but if you watch, his eyes are just blazing with hatred. It's the greatest thing. So let's hear, and then people underestimate how funny and how sort of aware Bob Dylan is, and we'll hear just a tiny snippet of Bob Dylan's speech, which came a little later in the night.
And I want to thank Mike Love for not mentioning me, and I play a lot of dates every year too. And peace, love, and harmony is greatly important indeed, but so is forgiveness, and we got to have that too. So thanks.
Yeah, it's true. Mike Love did not mention him, so that was good.
And then George said later that he guessed that Mike forgets the lessons of the Maharishi. Because they were in India together and they were buddies, and it was all about peace and love and not like vicious attacks for no reason.
Did anyone ever inform George about like Sexy Sadie and the actual lessons of the Maharishi? That's another story.
That's a whole other issue. And that's still debated to this day.
Okay, great.
That's a whole other subject, yes. But that night ended with the biggest all-star jam in the history of rock and roll.
Yeah. I mean, who was on stage that night? It was like Springsteen and Paul McCartney and
I'll just read some names.
Okay.
It was like Billy Joel and Les Paul, John Fogerty, Benny King, Bob Dylan, George Harrison, The Supremes, Jagger, Elton John, Paul Schaefer, Yoko and Ringo, and all the Beach Boys, and Jeff Beck.
All at once, right?
Yes.
That's the crazy thing. It was like all playing.
Yeah. I was interviewing Jeff Beck once, and I asked him about it, and he said that there was no rehearsal, and it sounded worse than any noise that he's heard in his whole life. Because he said the sound of 48 guitars playing at once, all unrehearsed, is just like the worst thing you've ever heard.
That's funny, because Nils Lofgren said a similar thing about the 1995, it was the big concert to celebrate the actual opening of the Hall of Fame itself, the physical building in Cleveland, and they had a jam led by Chuck Berry, who apparently... rest in peace, kept changing the key every verse, and you had some of the greatest musicians on earth completely unable to follow him, and Nils said that it was literally the worst train wreck the E Street Band had been involved in since they were like 12 years old.
And they're playing at a football stadium live on pay-per-view, and Chuck Berry is just changing the key every 2 seconds.
Which there's no reason for, by the way, other than sheer hostility.
Yeah, basically.
there's no good musical reason for that. So let's hear a little bit, not of the 1995 jam, which, by the way, I cannot find anywhere. I think it's been erased from history.
The opening jam on Johnny B. Goode.
Yeah, but not the closing, because
I
think it's so cataclysmic that they're afraid the world will explode.
They burned all copies of it. It's like, there's the lost ark.
It's like the Star Wars holiday special of rock and roll. So let's hear a little bit of that all-star jam that night, not in 95, but in 1988. So moving on, you're a big fan of the 1990, I think, Simon and Garfunkel speeches?
Yeah, because that was a period in which Simon and Garfunkel were not speaking to each other and really not, it was a bad period in their civil war. And then Art gets up there and is very gracious, and he's like, I want to thank, Paul. He's enriched my life in so many ways. I want to thank him for that. And then Paul walks up, and he was like, Artie and I, we agree on virtually nothing, but there is one thing. I have enriched his life. And you could just see Art's face, like, I'm going to fucking kill you. And then flash forward to 1999, I think, Paul was inducted, and they again weren't speaking. And Paul goes, and I guess I should thank Artie. It's a shame our friendship ended. I'm hoping one day that we'll speak again. Then he paused. But no rush. There's no rush. So even on his own solo moment, he had to burn Garfunkel.
Man. And then I think 93, we'll head to.
Yeah, that was a weird year. That was in Los Angeles, so the first time that they'd moved it somewhere else.
And that was the year of Creedence, right?
That was the Creedence thing, yes, which was very uncomfortable.
Which was basically the other guys in Creedence did not know. They thought there was no performance.
Or they thought there was a chance. Like Tom Fogerty's son, he showed up and he brought his guitar and he really thought that he was going to play his father's parts.
And there was a performance, but the only member of Creedence that was involved was John Fogerty.
And what's important to note is John hadn't really been playing Creedence songs in a very long time at that point. So even to get him to even agree to play Creedence songs was a big deal. And he was in the middle of like round 500 of his battle with the Creedence guys. And so he told the Hall of Fame that he would play, but not with Doug and Stu. But they didn't bother to tell Doug and Stu that.
So they got like Springsteen, Robbie Robertson, and like the house band. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But they get up there, they all speak, and you can just see the tension up there. And then John walks over and plays Born in the Bayou with Springsteen and Robertson, and Doug and Stu just stand there just like volcanoes. There was like steam pouring out of their eyeballs almost.
I mean, contextually speaking, they had supported Saul Zance in his lawsuit against Fogerty, right? And that was, so it's not like this came out of nowhere. He was furious for a reason, according to him.
Yeah, I think that they see all that in a very different way than John saw it, you know.
Well, you know.
Yes, but yes, so it was a moment of tremendous like tension, and it became infamous. And then that's what sort of caused, that was the breaking point in which they hired a new singer and started touring as Creedence Clearwater Revisited. Right. And then John sued them for that. And the judge said, well, it is 2/3 of the members. That's 2/3 of the name. That sounds fair to me.
And that that is Gorsuch.
Yeah, that's Gorsuch. He's into his member of the Supreme Court.
That kind of Solomonic wisdom is what we need in the Supreme Court.
Yes.
So you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. We are going through some of the craziest moments in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame history. And we have much more for you. We'll be right back.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
So yeah. where are we in our chronology?
Let's jump to 1994.
Good year.
Stellar year in which Bruce Springsteen and Axl Rose, they did a spontaneous come together to honor John Lennon.
Yeah, this was always tantalizing. I was talking at the beginning of the show that back then, and it's one of those things that's so hard to communicate pre-internet. But so the Hall of Fame would happen. You're a kid at home. If you cared, that was like, if you're the weird kind of kid who cared about that kind of thing, and you literally all you'd hear about it was on the news. They'd be like, "And the Hall of Fame induction happened here, and here's what happened." They'd show like 5 seconds of Axl Rose and Bruce Springsteen singing, and I'd be like, "What? That's crazy!"
Then in Rolling Stone, in the random notes, there'd be pictures, and you would just drool over them.
And that's all you got, and that's all I got. And for years, I wanted to hear this. I mean, and it's not. And actually, let's through our current technology, we can hear it right now. So let's hear a little bit of Axl and Bruce singing together for the only time probably in their lives. Come together right now. Over me. Of cool. Yeah. So, I mean, the truth is, I mean, you know, it as badly as I wanted to hear it all those years, it really does just sound exactly like a Bruce Springsteen imitator and an Axl Rose imitator singing together. It's like very much just the thing they're doing.
It was supposed to be Elton John and Rod Stewart.
Right.
But there was an earthquake and Rod Stewart's kids were really freaked out and they didn't want him to fly cross country. So he skipped the induction. So they had a big hole to fill and it just sort of got filled randomly by Springsteen and Axl.
As legend has it, it literally came together, so to speak, during the show, during the live show. The producers went around and they were like, Bruce, come sing it, and he wasn't really feeling it. Then they enlisted Axl, and Axl like came over to Bruce, and then they're like, they're basically like, screw it, let's do it. And they did it again, according to legend, with absolutely no rehearsal. And like, what it sounds like is kind of like they went up and did karaoke together, you know, just and two buds doing karaoke.
What's noteworthy, it's Axl's final performance before he vanished.
Yeah.
And when you saw him again, he had dreadlocks and was like Buckethead. It was a whole new world. So this was like the final glimpse the world got of like pre-crazy Axl.
In a way, Springsteen was the guitarist between Slash and Buckethead.
Yeah, you're right.
But when you hear it, you can tell that it did not have a lot of premeditation, but I think there's something really cool about it. I mean, it's one of those things like, one of those weird, like, sort of classic rock things where you can show people, be like, this happened. Like, can you believe it?
That's part of the fun of the Hall of Fame before it became a big TV special.
Exactly.
It was less rehearsed. It was in a ballroom. It was like lower stakes. So things would just happen. Now it's still great, but it's rehearsed.
Yeah, it's much more rehearsed. It's very, they're not going to pull someone off the table.
No, it never happened. Okay, then the next year is a favorite of mine. It's when Led Zeppelin got inducted. And the timing was just crazy because Page and Plant had just come together and they didn't invite John Paul Jones. And at the press conference for Page and Plant, when they asked about John Paul Jones, Plant jokes, I think he's parking cars out back. Oof. And it really pissed off Jones, who they didn't even tell about the tour. He saw it advertised. Then he saw their album, what's called No Quarter, which was his song. And he was just livid. But then they had to go play with him out of the Hall of Fame.
Didn't he say, like,
walks up to the microphone through gritted teeth and is like, I want to thank my band members for finally remembering my phone number.
Ouch. Yeah. And then the jam, Neil Young, my understanding from reading the great biography, Shaky, is that Neil Young had basically practically never heard Led Zeppelin, supposedly, which I how could that be? And then he ended up basically, it was like Led Zeppelin plus one with Neil Young like dominating the proceedings. Whoa, and it's so bizarre.
They played with Steven Tyler and Joe Perry too.
Oh, I always forget about that,
And then that was Neil's year when he got inducted and he wanted to jam with them. So they doing the levee breaks, but Neil just stepped up like he does and he just took over. He didn't realize this is like a hugely historic moment and he didn't know the song very well. So it sounds nothing like When the Levee Breaks. It's like 10 minutes of like craziness.
When the Levee Breaks Down by the River. So let's hear a little bit of that nightmare, which I kind of like, but it's bizarre. So let's jump ahead to 2002.
Yeah, that was a really interesting year because Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers got inducted. And their bassist, Howie, was incredibly sick and was basically dying. He died a couple months later. That's the last time that they played with them. And it's really hard to watch those clips because he looks horrible. And the Ramones got in.
Yeah, and that was Eddie Vedder showed up.
Yeah, he showed up with a mohawk and then proceeded to talk for 17 or something straight minutes, just off the cuff, crazy and awesome. And then Johnny gets up there.
Yeah.
You know, Joey had just died. Johnny didn't go to the funeral even, you know, they hated each other.
Yeah.
And Johnny gets up there and was like, I want to thank President George W. Bush. You know, who, to say that in that room, he's probably the one Bush voter in the room. And then Dee Dee gets up there. And, you know, it's like, Dee Dee's crazy. And all he does is just pat himself on the back and say, thank you, Dee Dee. I'm going to thank you, Dee Dee. And then he died of a heroin overdose, I think, 3 months later.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was sort of very sad in hindsight. But the cool thing was that the Talking Heads reunited.
Yeah.
And that's something that David Byrne said he would never do. and the other three have been begging for it forever. They toured as just the Heads with a different singer a few years earlier, and he went ballistic. But he sucked it up. They rehearsed for days and days and days. They brought in Bernie Worrell. They did Psycho Killer. They did Life During, they did Life During Wartime. They did Burning Down the House. And it was sort of a nice way to end it on a high note.
And so what next? Do you want to talk about Prince?
The next year was a huge bummer in 2003 because The Clash got in.
Yeah.
And Joe Strummer wanted to play.
Yeah.
And after they got inducted, he was telling people that he wanted to play. And Paul Simon, the bass player, said no. The last few hours of Joe's life, he was faxing Paul Simon and telling him that his solo band bassist, he was going to like step in if he wouldn't do it.
Yikes.
And then he dropped out of a heart attack. So it's really tragic. Because that could have restarted The Clash. If they played there, they could have gotten back. So it's really upsetting.
And when did the ugly stuff with Blondie happen? Was that like the next year?
The Blondie shit was 2006. Yeah. So we're skipping the Prince stuff.
Let's go to Prince. So this moment, I mean, you can't talk about it enough. First of all, Prince's own performance was so great.
This was his big comeback year. This was the 20th anniversary of Purple Rain, where he was going to go on a big reunion tour. On a big tour of his hits for the first time in a long time.
It was a reunion tour because it was a reunion of Prince with being Prince as opposed to.
Yeah, but this was the start of it. This was the first push of that year was this. So he gets up there and he wants to kind of show the world that he's back.
Yeah, and he did Sign of the Times. It was a
huge medley with Sheila E. and everything, and it was awesome.
It was awe-inspiring. It was one of the greatest live performances I've ever seen, just his part.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and this was discussed a lot in the wake of his passing, but man, I mean, I was in the audience when they did While My Guitar Gently Weeps. You know, Prince did kind of what Neil Young did to Led Zeppelin, but somehow it worked better because it was still a tribute to George Harrison, a tribute to the Beatles, but he also just took it to the stratosphere. It's one of the, and maybe the single best guitar solo I've seen in person. It was it was sort of this thing where just when you think it was going to end, it went up another level. And then he threw his guitar, and as far as I could tell,
it's still in the air.
As far as I can tell, it never landed. So let's hear a little bit of that.
Prince claimed a few months later the first time he ever heard that song was that morning.
I don't believe him, but go on, yeah.
And when I interviewed Paul Schaefer about it a few years ago, he told me that they rehearsed it and it was great, but that Prince held back a lot. And when it was the show, he just took it to level 6,000. And I think at first that George's family didn't want him to be a part of it. They wanted people that knew George.
Yeah.
But they got sense talking to them, and they said okay, and then he just took it to town.
It was really incredible.
Yeah, that was the same year as Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band, which are overlooked, but it was the first time they played together in a long time.
Poor Bob, he blew out his voice that week, right? He over-rehearsed.
Yeah, that sucked. It had been almost 10 years since last time that he played anywhere.
Yeah, what a bummer. So people kind of thought his voice was gone, which it's not.
Yeah. When he came back like 4 years after that, his first tour, it was very awesome. Then 2006 was a crazy year. It was Black Sabbath that didn't actually play, which was a bummer. They were in some fight, so like they wouldn't play. But then the Sex Pistols they got inducted, but they didn't show up. And from what I've heard, the three guys were dying to come. Johnny Rotten, he said hell no.
Yeah, I love how in this context he's Johnny Rotten, like for sure that he's not John Lydon.
No, he's Johnny Rotten. Sex Pistols. He wrote a letter that Jan read,
right?
That called the museum like urine and wine,
piss stain or whatever.
Yeah.
He kind of wrote it on the Johnny Rotten nomadic. It wasn't very creative.
It was not interesting. No, but then Lynyrd Skynyrd got inducted.
Yeah,
and the Skynyrd at that point was down to like three members of the old band, and there were three former members that sued them, and there's a lot of hatred there. But they sucked it up. They all played together. That was included backup singers that were in the plane crash that hadn't performed as part of Skynyrd since the plane crash.
Who survived the plane crash? Yes.
No, yeah. it was some of them died. It was actual ghosts.
Yes.
No, of course. Yes. It was survivors of the plane crash that left the group after the plane crash, came back, and they did Freebird with everybody, and it was amazing. It was just an emotional moment. because you think that they would fight, you know. But what happened was Blondie, that they got on stage, and there had been a lot of bad blood when they reunited, and they didn't bring back some of the old members, and they wouldn't play with them. So the only opportunity they had to speak to Debbie was at the podium. So they were like, Debbie, can we play at the podium? And she goes, the band's over there. And they go, Debbie, I thought we were the band.
Oh.
And this is
agony. It was agony to watch. Yeah. It's just not fun. It's not even funny. But yeah.
No, but if you're an ex, you know, if you've been a Blondie for 20 years and your bitterness has reached that point, you can't help yourself, you know.
Yeah. And so what next?
In 2007, it was a big year. It was the first hip-hop act inducted, which was Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five.
Yeah.
It was R.E.M. who they reformed that night with Bill Berry on drums. But the big news that night was Van Halen, because it was right before David Lee Roth came back. And I think Eddie, he was in rehab. They picked a horrible time to get in. And so the only people who showed up, actually, were Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony. And they played with Paul Schaefer in the CBS Orchestra. And it was a bit of a train wreck. And then Velvet Revolver, they played something. I think I'm talking about Love.
Yeah.
But at the All-Star Jam at the end, it was also Patti Smith's year.
Yes, this is one of my favorite Hall of Fame moments of all time as far as just pure insanity.
So they're doing People Have the Power. You've got Eddie Vedder there. You had all these people. You have Patti Smith. You have R.E.M. And then when it comes time for, you know, they were passing the microphone around, it goes from Eddie Vedder to Sammy Hagar.
Yeah, and Sammy Hagar was just roaring through People Have the Power. And the thing is, it sounded great. He's a great singer.
Right.
It made more sense if you closed your eyes. Let me put it that way. Because he's like sitting there wearing his like Sammy garb next to Patti Smith. And Patti Smith and Sammy Hagar, people act like they're from different planets, but they're both singers. Like they can both sing the same song. It's really, in the end, it's all...
Right, you but know. It's just a rare opportunity for Sammy to be part of like the Eddie Vedder world.
Yes,
he's never in that.
Yeah.
He deserves to be. I love Sammy. You know, he always complains to me that he's not invited to Bonnaroo or Coachella. You know, he's never asked to be part of these things.
Yeah, and he sang it with extra gusto. He was great.
It was great.
That was a great moment. So what next?
2009 in Cleveland, you have Metallica.
Yeah.
And then the guitar jam at the end. That was a big guitar year.
A lot of bass players. Weren't there like a lot of bass players on stage that
year? Well, what happened, they played Metallica set with two bass players.
Right.
You had Jason Newsted and you had Rob Trujillo.
Right.
And then you had Jeff Beck, who played with Jimmy Page. They did awesome Beck's Bolero and Immigrant Song thing. And then Joe Perry was there to play with Run DMC, who then wind up performing. So at the very end of it, they did a jam on
Train Kept the Rolling.
Which was your idea, I believe.
I did suggest it to someone involved in the Hall of Fame. I'd like to take credit for that. I don't know. It was kind of obvious. I'm sure they would have gotten there.
So they did Train Kept the Rolling. It was the first time that Metallica played it. There's always guitarists, and they're all going to solo. But Lars didn't know the song, then just ended it early and really fucked it up. It was still really cool to see Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck playing together. That's the only time I've seen Jimmy Page perform. It's so rare you get to see him.
It's true. It's tough.
And it was very, very cool. Then 2012 was Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
And this was a big deal because for so many years before this, the big question is when GNR get inducted, are they going to finally play with Axl?
Right. It was, you know, and then so Axl in the end not only did not appear, but he actually said that you can't induct me.
Yeah.
You know, and he wrote this letter, and it really gets into that Axl Rose pro style. You know, for the record, I would not begrudge anyone from Guns their accomplishments or recognitions for such. And you know, I won't be attending the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I respectfully decline my induction. I strongly request that I not be inducted in absentia, and please let know that no one is authorized, nor may anyone be permitted to accept any induction from me or speak on my behalf. Neither former members, label representatives, nor the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should apply, whether directly, indirectly, or by omission, that I am included in any purported induction of Guns N' Roses. Wow, that's really definitely the style of the guy who wrote Sweet Child of Mine. He definitely wrote that himself.
Yes, absolutely.
His lawyer did not write that.
No.
Anyway.
That was him. Yeah.
So
they had to bring in Miles Kennedy,
right,
lead singer of Slash's solo band and Alter Bridge, and then they performed the first time with Steven Adler in a very long time, And it was kind of great.
It was nice. It wasn't, you know, it was anticlimactic, but it was nice.
Yeah, and then the Faces got inducted, but Rod Stewart had strep, so they brought in, like, Mick Hucknall from Simply Red.
Of course.
It was fucking awesome. When they played Stay With Me, when Ron Wood just tore it up, and with Ian McLagan on the organ, it was the best I'd ever seen Ron Wood play.
Yeah, I actually will say that it helped me understand a couple things, like, more viscerally, like why the Faces were considered such a great band. And yeah, second of all, hearing Ron Wood as the only guitarist, you could actually hear just what he was playing. It's like, whoa, Ron Wood was playing, and he was newly sober too.
Yeah.
And he had his girlfriend at the time there. I remember seeing her.
Yeah.
Young woman.
Like in middle school.
Yeah. Oh, stop. No, come on, man. Come on.
Stop it.
oh, man.
I'm joking. I love you, Ron.
So that was definitely a really
And then 2013 was in Los Angeles. It was this awesomely random year of Heart and Randy Newman and Public Enemy, Rush and Donna Summer and Albert King. And it culminated with this all-star jam of Rush and Public Enemy playing together.
It was very, very interesting and very fun. And I think for Rush, it was a real challenge. For Neil Peart, it was a real challenge. He's not used to having to loosen up and jam and play with people. He likes to prepare extremely meticulously. But let's hear a little bit of that, because it was such a wonderful moment.
Yeah, it was Crossroads.
Yeah, Crossroads. In the lead up to Crossroads, they had DMC and Chuck D rapping over Neil Peart's drums, which actually is less insane than you'd think, because of course Tom Sawyer was a very popular loop.
Right, but it's so unusual for Rush to play with anybody.
But anyway, John Fogerty was right there. John Fogerty was like high-fiving Geddy Lee. And I think it's great for someone like Rush who kind of tend to be over in their own corner. Mm-hmm. They got a chance to feel the love from the larger rock and roll community, so that was great.
It was great, and 2014 was the crazy year that we talked about, of like Hall & Oates and Peter Gabriel and the Kiss thing, Cat Stevens.
It was more about the buildup than the actual event.
Yeah, well, it'll be the last time probably that all four of them stand together.
Right.
So it was still a moment, but it's a bummer they didn't play. And then last year was a very unusual year with Cheap Trick and Chicago and Deep Purple and Steve Miller, who went insane backstage. That's the only time the story of the night was the backstage press room.
Yeah, and this is a good place to sort of finish up, which is Steve Miller just went off. What was Steve Miller's problem?
He was angry at the Hall of Fame for like 100 different reasons. He said that they didn't honor women enough, which is a fair point to make. He said that their finances are all secret, which is not true. It's a nonprofit. He said they should devote more attention to rock education, which they do. He was just in some psychotic mood, and he went crazy in the press room.
And then didn't he try to enlist the members of NWA?
Pulled aside Dre and Cube and tried to enlist them in his war against the Hall of Fame.
Which I love. This is a thing that I'm obsessed with. I'm obsessed with the fact that on the first NWA album, there are so many freaking samples of Steve Miller on that album.
Yeah.
There's like 12. In a way, it was so cool that they were both inducted, because Steve probably made more money off that record than NWA did.
I imagine the look on Dre and Cube's face of like, what the hell is this guy talking about? We're being honored tonight. Why is he so fucking pissed? You know,
it's really funny. He's
it was so bad the Black Keys called Rolling Stone the next week and voiced regret for even agreeing to induct Steve Miller.
And now Steve Miller seems, we just played some audio from Steve Miller talking about Chuck Berry. Just talked to us. He seems totally cool.
Yeah,
again.
He is. He's forgiven and forgotten. Yeah.
So before we wrap by, we did one thing we skipped over. Was one of my favorite moments was Neil Diamond when he just went off.
Yeah, he had flown in from Australia same morning and was all jet lagged and crazy and just got on stage.
Well, someone mentioned You Don't Bring Me Flowers.
It was Paul Simon's induction speech. Was kind of cracking jokes about some of his sort of softer songs.
Yeah.
And I think Neil just like jet lagged and possibly like he was possibly a bit tipsy or something. He came out roaring.
Cursed his way through the speech. It was awesome.
Then he played Sweet Caroline and put the mic right in Springsteen's face at his table.
He's like, sing, boss. Like, it was really like, it was, show me what you can do.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was great.
It was awesome.
I loved it. And I talked to him afterwards about it, and he was just like, I don't know. I just, anyway, so we had fun talking about the craziest moments of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the new induction ceremony is going to be airing on HBO at the end of April. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Rolling Stone Music Now at 1 p.m. on Volume. In the meantime, download us as a podcast on iTunes or rollingstone.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week.